You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Today, I am so excited to welcome Katie Joy Wells to Holding Space. Katie is a holistic decluttering expert and the host of the top-rated podcast, The Maximized Minimalist. I'm obsessed with that name, by the way. It's so good. Her work has been featured on NBC News Daily, Martha Stewart, Real Simple, Home and Gardens, and more. And she has a new book coming out called Making Home Your Happy Place, a real-life guide to decluttering without the overwhelm. I got a copy, and I am so excited for this to be out in the world. My goodness. In it, you introduce a really, honestly, shame-free way of approaching clutter that looks at the emotions. I love it. The belief systems. I love it. And habits underneath all of the stuff. So as a therapist and parent, I know how often our homes can feel like one more place that we're just falling behind. I just will say just this past weekend, I felt it. Mm-hmm. And I've done the work now, right? Where I was able to recognize I'm feeling so overstimulated by our space right now, right? We're like taking out all the Christmas decorations. There's pine needles on the floor because it's December right now. But also there's laundry on the couch. Like, we don't really have that designated space. That's where it goes. And then that's where it gets folded. The kids bring so much stuff in. My 14-year-old had left that day for a day with her friends, and it was just like a tornado came through the bathrooms, and like things are undone. The garage, like because of all the boxes coming in and out from the holidays, yes. Like the garage is just like now filled with also boxes from holiday shopping. And then it's like moments like that where all of a sudden then I'm like remembering all the little drawers that have all these little things in them. And it's like I got really overstimulated over the weekend, and I was able to tell my husband, like, hey, babe, I'm feeling really overwhelmed right now, like an overstimulated visually in this moment. And so I left the house, and bless him, when I came back, he had picked up some stuff in the garage, and like just even that made a huge difference. And I told him, I was like, I feel so loved by you right now. So I know. Personally, and for my work with my clients, how important this conversation is. And so, Katie, welcome to Holding Space. I am so glad you're here. And for folks who maybe are new to you and your work, can you share a bit about yourself? And yeah, let's talk about it.
Well, first of all, thank you for sharing that, because you know, the reality is that's just real life, right? We get overstimulated by our stuff. And really at the heart of it, and why I teach what I teach, is that our home environments are the invisible hand that shape human behavior. And so it is completely normal as a side effect when there's a lot of visual clutter in our homes. It's not just stuff. It's like a magnet for our time and energy and attention. And so the average American home has over 300,000 items in it. And a lot of people think, well, that's a lot. But it's just annoying. It's just stuff, right? I can learn to ignore it, or it just is what it is. But clutter and all the stuff isn't neutral. It's not passive. It is taking something from you. So I often, you know, a way to reframe it is this stuff is magnets, right? Everything, single thing, that's what you were feeling this weekend. There is a true human physiological response, which we can talk about, right? That our cortisol shoots up, especially as women, when there's all these things, not just sitting there, Yes, it's annoying, but it's a magnet for our attention, our time, and our energy, and that stresses us out. Can I go into some stats, by the way?
Oh,
can
we, please.
I geek out over this.
I do too. You're in a safe space for that.
Yeah. I think here's why it's just extremely excited to be on your show today and be with your audience. This is such a privilege because the thing about clutter most people don't recognize is the impact it has on our relationships. Just like you said, like you're like, I talked to my husband and was like, I'm feeling overstimulated, right? You had the self-awareness, you recognized it, you had the conversation, there, you came to some sort of solution, you felt better, right? But oftentimes what most of us experience is I see it as the mom or the wife and my partner, not so much. Or maybe it's flip-flopped. It's not always that way. And going into some studies here, because I geek out over this stuff, research shows that nearly 40% of couples argue about clutter and stuff. And about one-third about them argue about it weekly. This is chores. And I can't help but think of myself and my husband constantly when there was so much stuff, we were so overwhelmed. We didn't want to pick up the toys because it took us literally 30 minutes when we had all this stuff, 30 minutes. So of course we're like, it's your turn. No, it's your turn. Well, and then we pull out the list. Well, I did this, you know, it was so frustrating. And a Harvard business study, this blew my mind, recently found that 25% of divorced couples listed housework disagreements as their number one reason for splitting.
Yes. As a therapist that works with couples, not surprised in the least, right? Like, and also as a human being who is married and doesn't have a perfect marriage because we're not perfect human beings, right? Like this is absolutely at the top of the list, right? Yes. Like amidst finances, sex, parenting, household.
Household, right? And here's what makes it nuanced, I think, to so many of us women hearing. A UCLA study found that women who describe their homes as either cluttered or messy have elevated levels of cortisol throughout the day. So someone who isn't in a cluttered environment or messy, which I kind of want to talk about that too, our cortisol levels go down in the morning, right? But when we have elevated levels of cortisol, which happens when like we see a, I live in the North Carolina mountains, there's black bears. If I see a black bear out my window, my cortisol goes up. But then when I realize I'm safe, it goes back down, right? So it's like keeping you in this low grade fight or flight stress response and moving into how that correlates with anxiety, depression, physical health issues. And it's just, it's so much more than aesthetics, which I think we're oversold this idea, this perfect, you know, HGTV before and after. It's just like, I'm so tired of all that, like being shoved down our throats as women, because our homes don't need to look like a Pottery Barn ad to serve us and our family. It is just like, I'm here to like dispel that baloney. We're so tired of it. And that was really the birth of this holistic method that I came up with along the way, because so many of those solutions are so surface level. And I don't believe that there's anything wrong with any of the methods out there, but I believe that they don't work for most people, especially if you're busy, you don't have a ton of time on your hands. And if you're like most people, we have some emotional ties to our stuff. So when you think, gosh, this is really hard for me, or why is this so hard, or well, I'm keeping these things just in case, or this thing reminds me of my grandma, like I can't just let that go. A checklist or a question or a does this spark joy is completely irrelevant. And when we're constantly spoon-fed these solutions that we fall short in using because they simply don't work for us, what happens? Shame. Right? What's wrong with me?
What is wrong with me?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I would always think, you know, I'd come home into my front door and I'd be hit with this wave of stuff, of clutter. And I'd just be like, immediately feel so defeated. I'm a crappy wife. I'm a crappy mom. Why can't I get this together? Everyone else seems to have it together and be able to like keep a tidy home. And I think, again, it's these thoughts we have over and over and over, right? And you know this, and in your space, they become our reality. And when we try a new method or a new strategy or a new question, that for the most part, a lot of the stuff out there is just too surface level for what we really need as human beings. It doesn't take into account like how we are wired, our human physiology, which always bothered me. And when you start to realize too, the different types of clutter, how we can identify our patterns, and obviously you do a lot of that through therapy, right? Just bringing in a touch of self-awareness into the situation. And, you know, undercovering our stuff story, which we all have one, which is how we relate to, you know, it's our relationship with stuff. It impacts what we buy, what we keep, what we struggle to let go of. Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, speaking to spiking our cortisol, and this is a study that was done for women. So I was always like, well, why don't men feel the same stress? And I think that's that dichotomy really frustrates so many couples. And I know me, I was like, I would look at my husband and be like, do you not see this mess? Like, this is not my responsibility. Why do I seem to be the only one that cares? And when you are so overwhelmed, and when you are the spearhead for cleaning up, nagging your family to put stuff away, having to declutter, it becomes so all consuming. And it's not that, here's what I realized throughout the way too, is that my husband wasn't being mean or disrespectful. He literally just, it's the meaning we assign stuff, right? So when I saw a pile on the counter that I just cleared, what did my brain say? They don't care about me. They'll never care about me. I'm resentful. I'm angry. Like, it's like we sometimes personalize it. I'm not saying it's not annoying, but it's interesting that, like, I can look at the same pile as my husband and be triggered, and he can, like, truly not see it. And this is when I say, you know, clutter can feel like this visible expression of the invisible load so many of us women carry.
Yes, totally. And I think that you're speaking my love language in so many ways right now. Like, I'm like, where do we start with this? I love that the idea of exploring how meaning is attached to these things, because we bring, and there's so much history to this too, right? Yes. Like, we both have different meaning making systems that we bring into the home based on what was modeled to us, based on obviously what has been marketed to us, like now what each of our algorithms are feeding us, right? And it can make such a huge impact on the home, the energy in the home, the nervous systems in the home, the relationships in the home. So for instance, when I was sharing over the weekend that I woke up and I could tell that I was feeling really overstimulated by specifically the mess in the home. It showed up in the way that I was responding to my kids. And I think that oftentimes, like, what I'm actually seeking, what we're actually trying to seek and get is presence. But it's like there's constant sort of sense of, I need to address this clutter or this mess. I need to, or, you know, I need to respond to this email, or I need to finish this task. I think a lot of times it's actually in pursuit of presence, right? And so when we find ourselves, and then when they interject in that process for us of trying to address that thing, that chasing of presence, and we snap at them, it's like then the shame kicks in of like, gosh, like, I just want to be present with you. I want to be playful. I want to connect with you. I want to, like, be in my home and be joyful and I want my partner and I to feel like we're on the same page. But when the visible aspects of what is really connected to an invisible load, right, and all those invisible meaning-making systems and identities that are attached to, you know, how our home looks or how our home feels when you're in it. And it can have a huge impact on, our nervous systems, which then leads to, right, anxiety. It leads to triggers. It leads to, you know, snapping at our children and our partners or our pets. And but I really think at the end of the day, there is a value that maybe feels attached to why it feels like we're trying to work towards these things and address these things, but it can kind of get lost literally, figuratively in the mess, right?
Yeah, and that's such a great point too. And I just want to bring to light something, you know, that we touched on earlier, and that is, like, who decided culture, right? Who decided years ago, generations ago, someone decided the goal is to have a perfectly tidy house 24/7, right? It was a completely different time, and women were like, okay, like, let's do that, you know? But yet, years later, our lives are drastically different, even than our parents' generation, yet we still have the same kind of unspoken, you know, expectations for ourselves. And I am a perfectionist, like, I am a recovering perfectionist, you know, like, and I think, so again, it's really attractive and it can be really appealing to someone like me who is drowning in clutter, two kids under two. I'm looking for solutions. I'm being, again, like, spoon fed all these, like, spark joy. And I'm not knocking anything, but I'm like, oh, okay, that, does my old nurse, old, like, tattered nursing bra spark joy? No, but I need it. Like, or like, have I worn these pair of heels in the last 2 years? No. But what if I want to wear heels again? Like, yeah. I kept yeah. kind of running into yeah. this. And again, speaking to the standard, if the goalpost is a perfect home, and I literally, no matter how much I was decluttering, resetting, doing all these things I was told I needed to be doing, I was never hitting that point. And I remember one day in therapy, I had like my baby, I took him to therapy with me, and I was rocking him to like keep him asleep so I could like cry to my therapist. And I was just like unloading on her. I'm failing as a wife, I'm failing as a mother, and I can't keep up with all the chores and this, that, and the other. And I fully expected her, because like I wanted the hack, I wanted the tip. Like, what's the productivity tip I need, you know? And instead she said something I will never forget. It literally like gives me goosebumps. She said, "Katie, have you ever heard of good enough parenting?" And I was like, I bristled. I'm like, what? Good enough? Like that sounds like giving up. Hello, I'm a perfectionist. Like, why would I want to be good enough when I can strive for perfection or like better, better, better? You know, I was all about optimization, and I still am to a certain extent, but I have more balance with that. And then she explained, you know, Donald, was it Winnicott? I think that's how you say it. The British psychoanalyst maybe, or psychologist who coined that term many years ago, I think in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And he really discovered through his research that kids don't need a perfect parent. Mm-hmm. They need, speaking to what you said, present ones, consistent, responsive, mm-hmm. connected. And I was like, ah, I had gained so much freedom in that. And it's something for weeks after I continued to remind myself of, even though I was still drowning in mess and clutter, it hit different. And because yeah. it gave me such liberation, I was like, wait, Katie, why can't this be my goalpost when it comes to my home too? Mm. So we have good enough parenting. And I was like, boom, good enough home is born. Like, that is my philosophy. Mm. And every woman I've ever spoken to we start in this place with the discussion standpoint, this conversation, because we're overwhelmed, we're frustrated, we're drowning in guilt, often shame.
Yeah.
And it's because we've been sold this idea. So it's not about giving up and just being like, okay, I'll just have a messy house forever and be triggered forever. That's not what it is. But my good enough home philosophy is really a way to change the goalpost, right? You don't have to subscribe to that anymore. And I still to this day find so much daily liberation and freedom in knowing that I can look at a pile of whatever, maybe it is clutter, maybe it's mess that needs to get put back, and instead of it hijacking my nervous system, I can go, oh, okay, we have a plan, we know the strategy, and this is good enough, right? Good enough home. And it is such a beautiful thing.
Oh my gosh, what a relief, right? To recognize that, you know, this perfectionism ultimately was actually never possible. It was just this part of us, a protective part of us, that just has this like mask over anxiety of like, maybe if I can just, speaking of nervous systems and safety, if I can just make this perfect, then I'll be safe. And then what a relief, but also what a ton of work to let go of that protection and to lean into enoughness. So you've used now this word clutter and mess like interchangeably a little bit, but there also seems to be a distinction when you talk about it. Can you share more about that? Hey there, if you are a California, Nevada, or New York based parent, we are accepting new clients. If you reach out to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com, you can learn more about my group private practice that supports millennial parents. If you're struggling with triggers as a parent, anxiety, relationships, boundaries, if you're trying to process a traumatic birth experience, or you're navigating fertility or pregnancy loss, we are here for you. If you are ready to take the next step in getting support with therapy, head to the link in the show notes, drcassidymft.com. Then click on the contact page and fill out that form. That is you sending an email directly to me. I will follow up with you, and I will make sure that you will get connected with the right therapist in our group. And that's me included. We work with both individuals and couples. So if you are ready to take that next step, head to that link in the show notes. I am so excited to connect with you.
Yes. So here's what I learned throughout the way. Clutter and mess are really kind of being sold to us as like this all evil encompassing thing. So as I started going through my own journey, developing holistic decluttering and that aspect, I was still kept hitting the wall of like, I would clean the counters and the mess would come back. And like a lot of us, I would say, it's clutter, like clutter's back. Ah! And again, speaking to why words matter, because the meaning we assign it, you know? And I realized, holy cow, Katie, like this isn't clutter. So we need to make a distinction, because if we are gonna put our problem solving hat on, we need to know what the problem is so we can pull out the right solution. So for decluttering, for clutter, the solution is decluttering, not organizing. We declutter first, organize second. My default back in the day was organizing. And I know a lot of us, that is our default, because that's what we are sold. Why? Because we can be sold products. Mm-hmm. Bins, labels, I'm not saying those aren't handy, but like it is not a one-stop shop, honey. We have more to do. So declutter first, that became my mantra. Organize second is the solution for tackling clutter.
And by declutter first, you mean like going through and like getting rid of stuff? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, decluttering is literally just the act of letting go, right? Yeah. And so when I was looking at, you know, the laundry piles forming again, or the dirty dishes, or the kids' artwork that's kind of not done but not ready to be put away, stuff like that that was ending up on my surface areas, I kept like berating myself. I'm like, oh, it's more clutter. What's the solution? What's the system? And I'm like, hold on, Katie, this is expected mess. And I named it expected mess because my brain needed to be soothed.
Oh,
this is cyclical. Yes. It's like, not mess. Mess still sounds kind of like the enemy. Like, ooh, that's messy. Because who wants to be messy? That's not like a character trait any of us want to claim. Again, probably resulting from hundreds of years of culture. Right. And all the things, how we were raised, our history, all that stuff. So I was like, expected mess. And it really disarmed like so much of the guilt and shame I felt like around it. And I'm not saying we can't optimize it and keep it to a minimum. We can talk about one of my favorite strategies for keeping expected mess to a minimum. But again, it just depersonalized it. And then I think when we're in this space where it's not so like rooted in shame, what's wrong with me? I stink at this. I'm just not organized. When we're stuck in that space, like hope feels like impossible. Mm. And when we don't have hope, we don't take action. I remember looking at my husband and saying, I guess I'll just, you know, try to figure this out when the kids are 18 and move out. I just can't do it, you know? Mm. And for me, that also felt good as a perfectionist. Therapy side note, which I've learned, because if I didn't try, I couldn't fail, right? Mm. And that protected me because I didn't want to be like, oh, I messed this up again, you know?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So, yes.
There's this little corner of our kitchen, and I think that maybe the previous owners use it as a desk. It's just like this like counter space, right? And it's right under the medicine cabinet. It has these two little drawers that just, as you can imagine, just ends up getting filled with stuff. And it just became this like catch-all space for mess. My brain is really enjoying the distinctions and definitions here, because now my brain is like, well, what was it? I mean, it was a lot of clutter and it felt really messy, right? And so what we did recently is I did spend time decluttering and letting go of like, oh my gosh, so many just like, you know, medicine bottles and like little papers and just and wires and so many things. And we let go. And then it felt like I had to attach some meaning to the space. And we actually had just recently gotten one of those skylight calendars, which I had been like thinking about forever. And I was like, you know what? And it has like, and what I love about it is it has like pictures, like when you're not using the calendar that like kind of go by. And so I ended up, you know, we hadn't set it up yet, finally set it up and put it on that space. And all of a sudden this space became this like meaning moment where I like would stop to like, you know, when I'm in the kitchen looking at photos, or also now consistently reminding the kids and my husband, look at the calendar. Like it's becoming more of a habit. It gave me a little bit of hope. But then things started to pile up on it, right? Like some vitamin bottles, like kids' art, homework, a couple, you know, just it started to feel messy again. But now when I think about it got frustrating, right? Because I was like, this was supposed to be a more meaningful space now. Like I put all this effort and work in. But now when you said that word expected mess, and I think about what's actually in that little corner that has just been a source of stress for so long in the home, I think it's expected mess. Like, it's just, it's paperwork for the kids' homework. It's artwork. It's like vitamin bottles, because yes, like, you know, sometimes in the morning in the rush, we're passing out vitamins and the bottles end up there, and it's expected. They're yes. all actually meaningful, important things. Yes. I don't know. Something about the word expected though is really sparking joy.
That's what I'm here for, girl. That's what I'm here for.
It's expected.
Yes. Yes. What you are describing is expected. And I do agree that sometimes just assigning a purpose to a space can help us gain clarity. Mm, clarity yes. is so important. It's like the opposite of clutter, because clutter is chaos, right? So it can be helpful to be like, okay, well, what's the purpose? Like, take a 30,000 foot view. That's what you did. That's lovely. What's the purpose of the space? Well, right now it's a landing zone. I want to make it a little more intentional. Add my skylight calendar. And then we kind of envision it to always be gorgeous and beautiful. But we're human. Our family's human. Yes. And so stuff lands there. And we're like scratching our heads, like, what do I do now? So again, this is why I bring up these definitions. It's so helpful, right? So if it's expected mess, right? And so expected mess typically lands on surface areas, right? Any horizontal yep. surface is a surface area, floors, countertops, entryways, things like that. So my guess is that in some way, shape, or form, depending on the physical flow of your house, that place is a really convenient place for people to dump stuff when they come in and out,
it is,
right?
Yes.
So that's where, okay, so in the book, in one of the chapters on onboarding your family members, I'll cover this briefly. There's always more in the book. I came up with a framework, or just more of a strategy, called design for follow through. Okay. And this is something I discovered early on, because like, and we can talk about all the mistakes on how not to onboard your family, because I made all of them. They didn't work. But one thing I typically start with, or people think they kind of assume they need to start with, or maybe you've tried, is like, I've had the conversations, I've nagged my kids to put their stuff away. Or like, my husband always puts his keys on the mm-hmm. counter and wallet, even though like I told him not to, right? Stuff like that. And it's, trust me, I'm not saying like that's annoying. I mean, I would get annoyed. And yeah. so instead of being like, okay, do I bang my head against the wall like one more time and have this conversation, zoom out, take that 30,000 foot view, get curious, get objective, look at your home like you're a stranger, walk in it. And the reality is, again, going back to what I mentioned earlier, environment is the invisible hand that shapes human behavior. Mm. The more steps it takes, Cassidy, for you and your family to put stuff where you want it to live, mm-hmm. the less likely it is to happen the first time. So hence, expected mess is born, and it lives on our surface areas until we do something with it. So mm-hmm. design for follow through is a concept where it's, you look at your home and you go, how can I reduce the amount of steps it takes for my family to put their backpacks away? I don't want my kids' homework. So you're looking at the pain points, right? You don't want to like reinvent the wheel just to do it. Mm-hmm. For example, I had a client who her husband's keys and wallet, right? Landing on the kitchen island. She's like, this is my one spot I don't want stuff on, you know? And yes. I get it. Like, we all have our spot. Like, we want to see that clear, even if it's just like a 12 by 12 inch, like, because we can breathe, right? Yes, it feels so good.
Just clear off space. Oof. Yeah. Feels good.
And so we looked at the physical flow of her home. Well, she had put this really adorable like key holder. It was like 30 feet across the house. So what was sooner? Like right when he walked in, mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. like he passed like kind of little entryway and the kitchen island was right there. Mm-hmm. So of mm-hmm. course, I wouldn't even walk across a home, go through three rooms to put my keys away. So I said, girl, we need to design your environment to help him put his keys away fast. So we literally just put a hook she had. We shopped her house. Everyone has hooks. We have bins. We have all the things we need already.
Yeah.
We put it right there. And she mm-hmm. told him, hey, just so you know, I moved your spot for your keys. And like, that was it. He started yeah. automatically doing, because it's human behavior. So I think when we yes. play to that a little more, it's mm-hmm. only going to help. And yes, sometimes it can just be a bad habit and conversations can be helpful there. Yeah. But using that aspect to just look at your house, because what works for someone else on Instagram or TikTok or wherever you're spending your time mm-hmm. isn't always going to work for you. You really have to go off the flow, how people are naturally moving and transitioning in your house.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why I feel like the really spending time in the nuance of like your yes. home, your relationships, the flow of your home, the different quirks of things that show up. Like right now, like because of the age of like my oldest, right, who's 14 and now is into skincare, all of a sudden, there's a new surface area, yep, expected mess that happens when she's getting ready that can be really frustrating for me, right? And so, yeah. Okay.
I have a thought here too. Okay. Yeah. So again, we dive really into this. It's one of the five basic decluttering steps. It's in the first half of my book before we get to the deeper layers of clutter. And one of them is deciding on a physical boundary for your category of things. This doesn't have to be super granular. Sometimes people get a little too caught up in that. But this is, I think, especially important when you have a new hobby or lifestyle or like interest where it involves stuff, right? Yeah. And so your daughter's now into skincare.
Or it's like your kid's art stuff or your...
Yes,
like,
right.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, you're bringing stuff into your home. Let's say like I started doing watercolors. Well, that's maybe not the best example because I just got a tiny book. But let's just use your daughter's skincare, right? Yeah. So like 2 years ago, she wasn't using skincare. So by nature, she probably had less stuff in her bathroom vanity or bathroom space, right? Now she's probably like, hey, mom, Christmas is around the corner. Here are like the 5, 6, 7, 8 products plus what she has, right? And all of a sudden, even if she's using some of those, the visual stuff is, you know, creating maybe a little more frustration for you if you share bathrooms or like you're like, what's happening? So I love just establishing a physical boundary for things that could be like a bin, it could be a shelf, it could be this part of the kitchen or part of the bathroom counter. And it's just a really objective, clear way of like, when is enough enough? Because the reality is we're humans and we set the tone and model this for our kids. Like if we just keep consuming and never editing what we have and what's being able to identify what is clutter, when is enough enough? Like when should I let something go if I haven't used a skincare product ever? Or who can I pass this stuff along to? If we don't have answers to that stuff, it's just going to build and build and build until we're like 45 and like looking around our house and hating it, you know? Yeah. So anyway, it's just a really simple way you could like work with your daughter on that if it's becoming a pain point. But I think what's cool is you can use it proactively before it's a pain point and reactively, right? If you walk into your teenager's room and there's like 8,000 pairs of shoes on the floor, okay, here's our end goal, right? And that's another cool side effect of it is like, you know what you're working toward.
Yeah, and you're making me reflect on a little bit on myself too, right? And what I'm modeling, right? Like, I mean, maybe part of it is also I already have so much stuff on the counter for my own, and now we're adding more because of her new interests, right?
Yeah.
So this is also making me think about, you know, you talked about different types of clutter, and I just want to like, I think I love being able to categorize things and giving things names, as we've discovered in this conversation so far. And you are four types of clutter: superficial, scarcity, sentimental, and identity clutter. And I'm just thinking about like our bathrooms and like how much stuff we have on top of our bathroom counter and how overwhelming that can be just in the day. Like the first thing in the morning when I wake up and I go to the bathroom, right? And then I go to look at the bathroom counter, I brush my teeth, and that's what I'm looking at. And then I'm looking at like all the things that are like not closed or all the things that like aren't relevant. And I'm like, I'm even just thinking about that. Like how would I identify the things that are on top of our bathroom counter? So talk to us about this like superficial, scarcity, sentimental, and identity really quick.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the point really of this kind of diagnosis isn't to get you to go around your house and be like, what type of clutter is it? You will know when you when you hit the objective of, you know, it's clutter to you as in, and maybe we should zoom out for just a quick second. So understanding your definition of clutter is really important here because we all have different, like, it's like a lot of us are kind of unknowingly using definitions from like, I don't know, Marie Kondo, or it's just not clear.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what is clutter, right? So let's start there. So my definition of clutter, and often one that my students use, is clutter is anything that isn't actively supporting me, my family, and our goals.
Okay.
Actively being the key word. Like, I don't want this, if it's passive, it's probably turned into clutter. And the nuance here is maybe you bought that skincare product 6 months ago, you used it for a month, and then your skin reacted or you didn't like the smell and you let it sit there, right? Yeah. So time has gone And what wasn't clutter in the beginning has now become clutter just by asking that one simple question or mm-hmm. using that definition as your North Star. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
So what is clutter? So come up with your definition, because like everyone's kind of seen the bumper sticker, like clutter is anything that doesn't add to my life or bring me joy and happiness. And I'm like, okay, but girl, how is that going to help you figure
clutter,
out?
If it's clutter for me is the thing that drives me crazy, yeah. activates my fight, flight, freeze response,
yeah.
and leaves me feeling like ragey towards everyone around me.
There you go. I'm here for that. Yeah. So that's your definition, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're like, yes, this is clutter, right? You see something, let's just say it's a coffee mug you haven't used in a while. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, yeah, I'm feeling ragey. I want to let it go. But then your brain goes, oh, girl, Cassidy, but what if mm-hmm. you decide to use this? Or mm-hmm. that costs $30. Or mm-hmm. that was gifted to you. Oh yeah. My gosh, your mom gave that to you. What are you going to do if she asks? Or gosh, you bought that with the best intention of becoming a matcha latte drinker. And look at you now. You're not there. Shame on you, right? And, you know, I can laugh. That's a really silly mm-hmm. example of identity clutter. But we'll go through these. Yeah. So a lot of, again, the solutions for decluttering really help with superficial clutter. And that's like the outer layer. So if you look at clutter like an onion, I just peeled an onion the other day, girl. It's like it just like peels off with barely any effort. You don't typically need a strategy for superficial clutter because it is stuff that your knee-jerk reaction is like, I don't want this. There is no emotional tie. There is no like, well, this cosmetic, it's just clutter. You let it go. The excess, the unneeded, the unwanted, like just a little time and intention. Boom. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. It's gone. Okay. It's gone. Most people then feel better, right? They're like, oh, I can do this. I'm yeah. seeing more surface area. And then they go, okay, I'm good. Mm. But in most homes, I have had my eyes in literally thousands of families' homes over mm-hmm. the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. I would say superficial clutter is 20% of the collective clutter total, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so we go one layer deeper, scarcity clutter. This is okay. If you're like, I know this is clutter, but this costs money, but I'll keep it just mm-hmm. in case. But what if I need this? Right? Mm-hmm. So it's coming from a scarcity mm-hmm. mindset, fear of the future. Mm-hmm. Then we go deeper, sentimental clutter. I think people are really good at self-identifying with that one.
Yes.
This uh-huh. is the nostalgia, the memory. It reminds you of a certain point of your life, your marriage, your wedding, your grandma, your yeah. Aunt Susan, who had like bad taste in clothes and she gave you the scarf. But it's sentimental to you even though you don't wear it. So it's like, what do you do with it, right? And then yeah. at the core, and this one, I think more women, men feel this too, but a lot of women I work with, this really hits hard and was revolutionary kind of once I was able to pinpoint it with a definition, is identity clutter. So this is anything that represents who you used to be. Think like your high school trophies, your college textbooks that you know, yeah. like, This is probably all wrong information 30 years later anyway, yeah. but like this was like part of my life for years. Mm-hmm. It's tied to who you want to be. Mm-hmm. So there's an interesting overlap in like this aspirational clutter too, or who other people expect you to be. And I think once you can at least name that, you can then go, okay, normal. I'm normal to struggle with this.
Yes.
Oh, this is yeah. why these other strategies don't apply here. Does this spark joy? I don't know. I don't know. I can't deal with this right now. I'm going to put it away. That's what I always used to tell myself. Mm-hmm. And then we can go, okay, well, what tools can we apply for the job? It's just like when you build a home, you don't just use a hammer or nail. Sometimes you need a power drill. Sometimes you need all these different tools, right, for the job. And same thing applies with decluttering.
Yeah. And I imagine that your book helps us in navigating these different ways and bringing these tools.
Yes, so many tools. Can I share one really quick?
Oh my gosh, please, yes.
Okay. Most people really struggle with all the clutter types in a certain level, but you kind of have a dominant one. And a really common dominant clutter type people struggle with is scarcity clutter. Mm-hmm. And I just want to speak to something you brought up earlier, but we haven't hit on, is kind of like the part one to this answer. And that is kind of understanding our stuff story. There is a real human reason why a lot of us struggle with scarcity clutter. And that comes down to something, again, I talk more about in the book called Your Stuff Story, your relationship, how you view and assign meaning to stuff. And there are kind of three main pillars that form and kind of develop this, mm-hmm. this stuff story. So historical, mm-hmm. meaning your caregivers are the first people that you modeled and saw, and how they had a relationship with their stuff. Did they declutter all the time? Did they clean over spending time with you? Were your parents worried about a spotless home? Were your parents always talking about money? Was your family motto, mm-hmm. waste not, want not? Like, finances yeah. really come into play here too.
Oh, for sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think about all the times my parents told me, we can't afford that. Don't, you know, like yeah. decluttering wasn't a thing. Like, no, we keep everything just in case, because what if? So go back another generation before that. That generation, my grandpa, who lived till 100, lived through the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And it's when, you know, frugality wasn't like a moral character trait. It was like a survival mechanism, because they kept everything. They had to. And how that really, just like trauma can be passed down through DNA and generation to generation, so can that stuff story, just through historical. The second pillar is just our personal experience. So I had a client who went through a really unexpected job loss and literally like went to show up to work and she didn't have a job. So what do we do then, right? We don't, it can really impact our view of what we buy, what we keep, what we let go of. And then of course you have culture, which we could probably talk about on a whole other episode.
Oh, yeah.
But it really weaves that fabrication. And the point isn't to place blame.
Yeah.
Or be like, great, another thing I need to go to therapy for and talk about my parents. Like, when they're like living a happy life and I'm like trauma dumping on my therapist. Yeah. It's not to place blame. It's just to help us understand, like, it's not our fault. And just to bring awareness to the situation, no wonder it's hard for me. So going back to the solution, really one of my favorite frameworks in the book, and each chapter has a clutter type we talk about. But for scarcity clutter, it's the 4S framework. So this is rooted in cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I like an acronym, just like you, I like to name things. So the first S, it's all S words, not the one that a lot of us think of when we think of clutter,
mm-hmm. <Yep. laughs>
is to spot it, right? Spot uh-huh. the feeling. So it's yeah. like, I think it's important we spot that feeling when we're like, oh, I'm keeping this just in case. And a lot of us tend to meet ourselves with judgment and frustration. Mm-hmm. I'm really upset. Like, I just want to let this go. Why is this so hard for me? And just like, just spot it.
Mm-hmm.
Just spot it and understand, like, everything is going to be okay, right? Yeah. It's going to be okay. And then we can soften it, would be step two. So soften it, I think, is so important. And I still do this with myself. I have to say, Katie, it's okay. You spent $20 on this.
Yeah.
You can still let it go and feel safe in the decision that you are making the right call. And if you were to need it in your future, you could always go borrow one, you could ask a friend, you could rent one, you could buy one, right? So having some rules in place there can be really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we have to shift it. So what's a more helpful, more neutral statement we can move to there? I stink at this, or oh my gosh, I shouldn't have bought this, or whatever it is, the thought we're thinking. Typically, it's related to scarcity clutter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what if I need this? Let's use that one. Well, what if I need this? I'm scared to let go.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, just like I said, if I need this in the future, I trust that I will be able to get it. And I feel at ease letting this go. And then, you know, step forward is the final piece of that. So what does stepping forward look like? I would say 90% of the time it can look like truly letting go, adding it to your donation bin in your home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the step forward is like, I also need to stop buying all these skincare products when I have 18 unopened bottles here, right? Speaking to the roots of clutter, shopping being a big one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So just going through that really quick formula. And I mean, if you're not talking as much as I did, just in your own brain when you're processing this, it takes less than 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really beautiful way to just move forward.
I'm thinking about just, you know, let's say the bathroom counter. And so I can definitely spot it, you know, that I have accomplished, I have spotted it. I love this idea of softening, because I think that there's an element in there of like, if I can say to myself, like, oh, like instead of the shame voice, right, if I can soften and be like, it makes so much sense that like I would hold on to these things, or it makes so much sense that like I got this at that point, or that I spent some money on this at that point, right? Like I can connect with the person I was in the moment who received that thing or bought that thing and like put it here and thought it could be relevant or important, or was just busy, so placed it here, and you know, like I can soften towards myself in that. Yeah. And then the next S was shift.
Yes. Right? Yes, right. Kind of, so your reframe, right?
The reframe, mm-hmm. right? And so I think the softening and the shifting seem to kind of be connected there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then the next one is stepping forward. So I could go through and let go of so many of those things, especially because I no longer feel like negatively attached to it. Like it's admitting that like I'm shopping too much. Because I've already identified that like maybe I can soften towards that part of myself who was searching for something when I bought that, or was hoping for something when I placed it there, and maybe that no longer is relevant, and that's okay too.
Yeah. And your next step forward could be, okay, well, what's my physical boundary for this category of things? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like it could be mm-hmm. something so tangible in addition to decluttering. Mm-hmm. I know like it can be really easy to go deep real fast, and I'm all for it, because like my motto is let's pull the weeds out by the root and not just chop mm-hmm. them at surface mm-hmm. level, which so many mm-hmm. methods do. Mm-hmm. But I think it can feel scary to a lot of us to be like, I don't want to like figure out if this is identity clutter or like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a protective mechanism, I think. So even if it is just, hey, let's develop a physical boundary to work towards and give myself a built-in goal to work towards, like that's mm-hmm. That's huge.
Yeah, and what a beautiful thing to be able to model to our children, right? To be able to soften, to be able to spot things, notice things, to soften towards them, to shift the internal dialogue around these things, right? And then to take a step forward. I mean, gosh, I could apply those four S's to a lot of things in life, I think. Yeah. So this is really powerful and important stuff, and could be life-changing, I think, for a lot of folks. And so where can folks find you and get your book and continue to learn from you?
Yeah, come hang out on my podcast. If you like to listen to this show, I think you'll love mine too. It's called Maximize Minimalist, as Cassidy said. Way to get that right too. That's a tongue twister. So
I love it.
You're that's crushing it. and so I do episodes every Wednesday on the show. And then if you are a book reader, or if you are someone who, like me, like traditional decluttering advice has really let you down, I will tell you, like, it brings tears to my eyes. Like, this book will be such a huge relief for you. As Cassidy said, it's called Making Home Your Happy Place, A Real Life Guide to Declutter Without the Overwhelm. And I really wrote it for the person who, like me, was just is tired of the bins, is tired of the, you know, the marathon purges, the one size fits all the methods that require you to like waste your weekends, you know, away from your family. Like we're not doing that anymore, and you don't have to. And this book is so different, because again, it doesn't just focus on the stuff. It focuses on us as the people. Yeah. And I think that's so important. Like you said, the emotions, the habits, the everything underneath it, right? We have to pull that out by the root. And we'll talk more about the four clutter types, different strategies for those, so you know which tool in your tool belt to reach for when you hit that part in your home. We talk more about your stuff story, onboarding family, which I know we didn't have time to talk about today. I give some really tangible tips other than design for follow through. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's not just a read it once, feel better, do the thing type book. I really wrote it so it could be like a companion for you, something you can come back, you can dog ear, mark it up, write it up, highlight, girl, just write in that book. Yeah. And it really meets you wherever you are. And that's, by the way, that's like my recovering perfectionism talking, where I'm like, make it dirty, doesn't have to be pretty, like use it. Super supposed to be super functional for you. And I hope all your listeners today just walk away with like, your home can feel lighter and calmer, and your home doesn't need to be perfect. Your parent or your partner and your kids don't need to be perfectly on board.
Yeah.
But even if you just start doing some of these strategies, decluttering, letting go, simplifying, your home will feel better and you will feel so much lighter and calmer. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
this is incredible. I feel like the gift you're giving here in this conversation, I feel, is hope. And I think hope towards being able to access our enoughness and what I think we're all inevitably striving for in this life, which is presence yes. in our life and presence with those we love. And you're addressing one of the big things that can stand in the way of that. And so thank you so much. I'm going to share links to all this in the show notes so the listener can go straight there to find you. Katie, thank you so much. This was incredible and exactly what I needed. I loved it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.